Cowboy.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Wednesday to you, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, getting closer and closer to the Super Bowl. You know what that means? More and more hype, more and more analysis, more and more deep details. But you know what? Nothing has changed. You know, you can get more and more stories about how, hey, the Niners now, you know, I don't know if you know this, but the Niners are doing this or the Chiefs do this. But we're still at a point where I haven't moved on the thought of where this game is going to go. Any sort of inside details on how the Chiefs actually are stopping the running games of teams, how they are going up against the third best running team in the NFL, one of the in the top three, and have beaten the last two and could beat all three leading up to this to close out the season with a Super Bowl. But it still doesn't change the fact that when I look at this game and I see what the 49ers do right against what the Chiefs do right, I still am leaning towards Kansas City in this game. I just think that it is really hard. I don't care what defense, how much pressure you can get from your front four. I think it's very hard to just keep Patrick Mahomes in so much check that he doesn't damage you. And I don't know if the 49ers can keep up if they slip up defensively and all of a sudden Mahomes is able to put some real points on the board in a short amount of time. I don't think this is a blowout. I don't think this game gets out of hand. I think there's some people leaning in that direction. I'm the exact opposite. I think this game is going to be tight and interesting. It might get away from the Niners in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying the final score is going to be tight or it's going to come down to the last play, but I don't think you see a game where you think, wow, how in the world are the 49ers going to get back into this? They're down 20 or they're down 18 or they're down 24. I think that this game goes back and forth for a bit. I think there's a few mistakes that are going to be made by both teams. And in the end, I think the Chiefs just get away from the 49ers later in the game. I think their ability to put points on the board quickly and fast, and also you have 2 weeks to dissect weaknesses. And I know that tends to favor a defense. I just think with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, there's so many weapons there. There's such an ability of Mahomes to get out of pressure, to thread the needle on the run. And I think that is exactly where I'm leaning right now. But guess what? It could change tomorrow. Coming up, what were the Texans thinking? Really, seriously, what were the Texans thinking? What did they do? We'll tell you next, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM. Yeah, Super Bowl rolling along, and all the conversation about Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan, Garoppolo, Mahomes, all that. But did you see the news on the Houston Texans? The Houston Texans have finally named a general manager. Now, many of you are probably like, big deal, so what? So they named a general manager. Who cares? I don't even like the Texans. But there's a story here. There is a very interesting story here. If you go back into the summertime, the Texans fired their manager, Brian Gain. And when looking for a new GM, were after a Patriots personnel director, who the Patriots prevented from interviewing for the job. So the Texans backed off, all right? They interviewed other candidates, but decided not to go with anybody. And they ended up with a GM by committee situation in Houston, which is just a terrible idea. All right. Because you need a guy who is the buck stops here. This is my decision. We're not voting on every single thing that has to come down the pipe. So I never like, things by committee in that regard. But you know what I hate even worse? I hate it when you give the wrong guy the job, especially when that wrong guy is also your head football coach who's on thin ice anyway. And that's Bill O'Brien. Yesterday, Cal McNair named Bill O'Brien the general manager as well as the head coach of the Houston Texans, which meant this. And because two of the interviews that they had for the GM position were for minority candidates, that meant that they interviewed a number of people for this job. decided nobody they interviewed was worthy of giving the title to were willing to go into the entire 2019 season without a general manager, instead using different people and different voices to make every single decision along the way, including getting rid of Jadeveon Clowney or anything else that they did. They did it by committee. And now, instead of saying, okay, look, that may have worked, we got through it, we got through the season, but we do need a voice at that position. We do need a person at that position that knows what they're doing. They handed that job and those responsibilities on to the head coach, which I don't like. I don't even care who that person is. Now, there are very, very few people in the NFL that I would trust with both the head coach and the general managership of your team, right? Very few. But I will say Bill O'Brien isn't one of them. Bill O'Brien isn't one of them. And I think this is a very problematic situation for Houston going forward. Because here's a couple of things you have to understand when you have complete control over a franchise. And I saw this firsthand with Mike Shanahan, who really was the emperor of it all in Denver. And when Josh McDaniels came in, he was like the emperor part two. He wanted the same exact thing, and they gave him the same exact thing. The problem is that when you are a head coach, you're responsible for a certain department of the operations, right? Obviously, you know, play calling, player evaluations, all of the game planning, and you name it, right? All the way through. But the general manager is responsible for things like managing the cap, personnel, making those kind of decisions, right? We're going to have to release these people because of money. We're going to have to take these, whatever it may be. And they usually do it a step or two away from the organization, in terms of getting, you know, being close to the players. So they're sort of like, you know, a few steps back. Doesn't mean they don't know the players. Doesn't mean they shake hands. Doesn't mean any of that. Just means that they have to make the tough business decisions that come with playing in the NFL, with guiding an NFL salary cap, with guiding an NFL team. And coaches who have a very close relationship with players and oftentimes see players putting in a little extra effort, going a little bit of the extra mile, breaking down the game film even like more intensely, noticing a little bit of, you know, some of the new different nuances of a way a player is playing and seeing development, seeing growth at a particular position. And the general manager may have to make tough decisions that he doesn't want to make, but a coach making those same decisions, it gets even worse. And we saw that in Denver with Mike Shanahan a number of times, where he was too loyal to certain players, where you would say, look, you've got a salary cap restraint, and the production of that individual hasn't been quite there over the last couple of years. You have to, you know, you might have to make a move on that individual as their contract is nearing the end. That's going to free up certain money. But Shanahan at times would balk at that. A number of coaches have been guilty of this, where the two worlds don't collide in the same way, right? You want to look at your play. You look at your players differently than just numbers. And sometimes you have to look at your players as numbers. You just do. In a salary cap league that is very tight financially, sometimes you have to see your players a lot differently than the men that play for you and will die for you and will go to war with you, all that every single Sunday, in using that coaching mentality. Sometimes you need a business mentality that says, look, I appreciate what he's done, but I need to free up $7 million, and unfortunately, we don't need another linebacker. And that's what a general manager does. And coaches get sentimental sometimes, and I think this is going to be disastrous for the Texans. Look, I think there are people in this business, Bill Belichick is one, a number of others, that could really handle both, could really see as the players for the people that they are, and also, unfortunately, as the number that they are. And Bill O'Brien, I'm just not putting him on that list. I think this is where Houston could have went out and could have gotten themselves a smart guy. They could have gotten themselves the guy that is going to take this team that won 10 games and went to the playoffs and said, look, I got to sit down with the coaching staff and we're going to put together an even better roster. We're going to put together a better situation for where we are right now as an organization that's trying to win a Super Bowl. The other thing too, and the other thing to not forget about this process is when you have a head coach that's running the GM decisions, a lot of times, not all the times, a lot of times, they're not willing to admit they may have made a mistake. Maybe signing a guy to a big contract from another team as a free agent. Maybe drafting this player in the first round. Taking a gamble on this individual or that individual. And when you're a fan and you start seeing that it's not working out and you start seeing, boy, that guy is a problem, or he holds too much, or he drops passes a little too much, and you want that team to make a move on that player, a lot of times when you're a coach and a GM, you tend to stick by him a little bit more because you don't want to admit you may have made a mistake. You don't want your mistakes to pile up. Now, if you're a coach and the general manager is calling a lot of the shots with some of your input, well, then you can say, look, I'm sorry, but our second round pick isn't really working out as much 2 years in, right? You know, we may have thought he was, you know, a good player and good as we evaluated, we may have thought we got a steal, but he's not really ready at this level as we thought. He's not really ready to contribute like we thought. Those conversations need to take place. When you're running both ships, what conversation is taking place? Are you really surrounding yourself with people who are willing to say, hey, this was a mistake. We made a mistake here. We didn't evaluate this guy right. Or we shouldn't have reached so far in free agency to give this guy so much money. That's going to really strangle us down the road. You need secondary or third voices in this process. You need a GM, a head coach, and maybe a really solid assistant GM or somebody that's going to evaluate the draft with a lot of, with real complete evaluation, rather than one guy that is making decisions among some other people that may have a voice, but may be willing to just let one guy make all the decisions. Bill O'Brien is just not in that category. Could he prove me wrong? Sure, but he's not in that category.
No, you know when it works? I think the only time you can make a head coach also the GM is if you've proven yourself to be a really good head coach.
Right, sure.
You know, so I look at Bill Belichick. It makes all the sense in the world for him to be head coach and general manager because he's proven himself to be a really great head coach. I mean, one of the greatest of all time. So it makes sense that, you know what, he can handle the responsibility of a head coach and take on the responsibility of being a general manager. And we know, I mean, he's, you know, we know his personality. He has no problems cutting people.
That's right. He doesn't get so emotionally attached that he's not willing to say, hey, you know what, we may have dropped the ball on this and we're going to move on.
He's not even emotionally attached to, you know, his greatest quarterback of all time, the person responsible for bringing all these trophies home, for making him who he is. If Tom Brady walks, Bill Belichick would be like, on to the next.
Yeah, and the huge success that he has had allows him to take a flyer on, like, Antonio Brown, where people go, well, you know what, if there's one team that makes it work, it's going to be the Patriots, right? Like, you give him the benefit of the doubt, where if any other team snagged Antonio Brown right after the disaster in Oakland, you would be questioning their sanity. Like, you're bringing in a wide receiver that's coming in with so much of a mess. But with the Patriots, it was an entirely different conversation.
I mean, say it's like right now. Say Bill O'Brien brings in Antonio Brown right now. Or, you know, back in, what was that, October, September?
Right.
When the Patriots...
That's September. Yeah. Week two, I think.
So if you were to bring him in now or bring him in then, I mean, I guarantee Antonio Brown would have lasted a lot longer, would have destroyed that locker room completely, would have unraveled all of anything the Texans had hoped to build.
Sure. Sure. But,
and I got to tell you this, you know, being in Houston, I, you know, will say this, that everyone here is extremely excited.
I'm sure they are.
About Bill O'Brien being general manager. The Twitter timeline that I have, you know, with all the Houstonites, the Houstonians, they were all in favor. It was amazing. Tony.
Amazing. Couldn't wait. This is a guy that they thought was going to get fired blowing a 24-0 lead in the divisional round of the playoffs. Then you start realizing who's going to fire him. The only person that can fire him is the owner.
Well, that or himself.
Right. Or himself. Right.
I would change the word, not thought they would fire. I think a lot of them were hoping.
Hoping, right.
I think hope was a better word.
As soon as that fake
that
punt
situation.
Failed.
Yeah.
It's like, get him, like, have him leave now. Just walk out now.
They were outside NRG Stadium with pitchforks and torches.
This is really weird when you think about it. And I get sometimes when you want a certain individual, it's, you don't want to make a move on somebody else where you give them a big contract. You know, we hear this all the time in coaching, in the coaching world, right? Especially in college, where you want a guy, you want a coach, but you're afraid to give a big contract to another. You want to wait for the opportunity. We talked about this with Clay Helton, right? Maybe one of the reasons Clay Helton got a 1 year extension with USC is because maybe there was a belief that Urban Meyer would come back into the college football world, but not this year, next year. And you kind of don't want to give Clay Helton like 5 years, you know, $20 million that you got to pay out. But in this situation, was Nick Caserio of the Patriots such a the guy they had to have that they decided it's either him or nobody? Like, they wanted to make him the general manager. So it shows you that they wanted the position filled. But once the Patriots filed the grievance and they had to back off on the interview process with Caserio, they decided, well, then nobody gets the job. We're doing it by committee with people that are already in the building. And, oh, by the way, we'll just give it to the head coach. That's an incredible transition.
I know Bill O'Brien came from the Patriots.
Right.
But he still has a strong love affair. It's like the only other team he knows.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Because right. Everyone he brings aboard is from the Patriots.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So, interesting development in Houston. But I just don't see Bill O'Brien on that same level at all. All right, more thoughts on Super Bowl 54 as we continue along. It is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. If you'd like to call the program, it's 800-224-2004 as we continue along on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So I think our streaming app is up now, isn't it? We've had it down for a couple of days. I'm very excited now because all of you who tweeted the show over the past couple of days, we had a little technical difficulty. Yep. Sometimes that happens. Thanks for sticking with us and let us know that you're back up and running. As Ron said yesterday, full participation necessary now.
Is expected.
No excuses.
I mean, basically what we did is we thwarted Skynet from happening.
That's right.
That's the stance that we're taking.
That's right.
They was trying to take over. We said, no, Skynet, not today.
No, not today.
So we had to shut it down and rebuild.
We're getting closer and closer to Skynet. I will tell you that right now.
Yeah, we are.
Closer and closer. I'm seeing these options on cars and stuff that just, forget it. We're getting kit without talking.
I hope so.
Without the conversation.
I really just want to sit back in a car, much like what Kit was able to do, and just say, take me to a destination so I can just cruise and fall asleep.
That's right. I remember one episode Michael Knight was playing Pac-Man while Kit was driving.
Exactly.
Who
doesn't want to play Pac-Man?
Who doesn't want to play Pac-Man? By the way, if I see a Pac-Man or a Ms. Pac-Man machine anywhere, I'm looking for quarters.
Not only that, but if you see someone sleeping at the wheel of a car, is that reason for concern? It still is, right? Because I don't feel like we're 100% there yet.
No. Yeah. No, if you see something, yeah.
Every once in a while, you see that video pop up, someone just sleeping at the car because they're in a Tesla that's auto driving at that moment.
No,
thank you.
I don't know. There's the first time I get into a self-driving car, I'm going to be scared to death.
Oh, I'm wearing like full catcher's gear.
You have to be like after a while where you go, okay, I get it. All right, this is going to work. I'm good with this. I'm moving along. Here we go.
To that point, much the same with flying cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all excited.
If the day ever comes with that.
I thought for sure, watching Back to the Future 2, that's where we'd be at this point.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, oh, man, how great would it be just fly over these houses and get to that? You know what? But there's still some idiots on the road.
Neil deGrasse Tyson said in an interview that we're never, ever going to have flying cars because the force that it takes to elevate a car would be so loud if you multiplied that it would just shatter buildings.
Way to go, Neil.
And I thought, that's terrible. Thanks for ruining my potential. There was always the hope that science would overcome those kind of things.
Yep.
He was saying that, he goes, the amount of energy that you would need to propel a car, if you had like, let's say 50 cars just in one area that all did that, it could shatter windows. I was like, man.
Doesn't Neil know we're just going to use alien technology that we already have?
He doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. So Super Bowl 54 heading up on Sunday. I read a great article at the Athletic on the behind the scenes of the Jimmy Garoppolo trade by the Niners. Tim Kawakami wrote it, and I was fascinated by it because it was Kyle Shanahan was driving into work in October of 2017, and it was like 5 a.m. All right, it's obviously 5 a.m. in California. So it's like, 8 a.m. in New England. And he gets a phone call from Bill Belichick. And basically Belichick says, I want to trade you Jimmy Garoppolo for a second round pick. And Shanahan's on his way to the office, going into Levi's Stadium. And he says, okay, I got to talk to John Lynch. And he goes, John Lynch was already at the facility that early. And then they talked about it and called the Patriots back and they got him. But who they really wanted was Kirk Cousins. So the idea was that they were going to trade for Garoppolo just to see how it was going to work out and then still try to pursue Cousins in case it didn't work out. And obviously it did. Garoppolo came in, learned the playbook a bit, won the last five games of the 2017 season. Everybody went crazy. They signed him to the big contract. Week three, he gets hurt. The season is kind of lost. But nevertheless, they feel like they've got their, you know, obviously now they feel like they've got their quarterback, and he's now delivered a Super Bowl appearance. He's helped deliver a Super Bowl appearance. However you want to put his performance in the playoffs where he barely threw the ball, he's still the starting quarterback, and he helped them, you know, to the number one seed in the NFC. But it was just fascinating to me just how quickly that went down. Like, Belichick was like, yeah, I need to get rid of this guy for a pick. I'm going to send him out of the AFC. I know John. I know you. I know your dad. I know that he's going to land in a good spot because Belichick apparently told Garoppolo, if I trade you, I'm going to make sure you're in a good situation. And sent him off to Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers, and the rest is history. So yesterday we were talking about how, you know, Patrick Mahomes came to be, right? The big gamble that the Kansas City Chiefs had by drafting Mahomes and also then saying, going into his second year, you're running the whole show, kid. Take this playoff team and take it one step further. Good luck. And he did. Took him to the AFC Championship game and then the following year, obviously in the Super Bowl. But Garoppolo was different. Garoppolo had been with the Patriots. People liked him. People who worked him out really was, they found him to be a very good talent. Shanahan said he was a fan. But you know what else is put into this article? Kind of a reminder. We all know this, but it just kind of reminds you. And Peter King was talking about this yesterday too, about Andy Reid. These guys get into work incredibly early and stay incredibly late. And I'm wondering, like, what if you're a coach in the NFL, you can't have anything else going on in your life, right? I mean, you have to be, besides family, there's no hobbies. There's no going to see a movie or relaxing with your, like, you are going in at four in the morning. You're leaving at 9, 10 o'clock at night. You buy this really nice house with the money you're getting as an NFL. You never see it. You never get to enjoy it. Your backyard is a swimming pool you never dive into. Maybe you got a nice theater room. You never sit down and watch a movie. Maybe you even use it to watch film, but I doubt that because the facility probably is better technology. Like, you never see the sun. Yeah, they were joking yesterday that Dick Vermeil once made a comment that he didn't recognize that the leaves changed because he went in, he couldn't see them, and he left and he couldn't see them. And it was just fascinating to me. That you could go in so late, so early, and leave so late. And it makes you wonder, what exactly do they do every single day for 17 hours a day? Like, how many times do they watch all the film of their opponent? They must watch it 10, 15, 20 times a day going through it. All right, this is from week two. Our opponent did this. This is from week four. It just must be constant, constant preparation.
When they're doing that, they're probably watching each individual position on every single play.
Oh, everything.
I mean, you know what? But that, to me, is amazing because to train your eye just to focus on that.
Yep, very true.
That's how I know I'd never be a good head coach.
Yep. I wouldn't be a very good head coach because I like sleeping.
Yeah.
I try to get as much sleep as I can, especially getting up for this show. I try to sleep in the afternoon if I can. I try to take a nap when I can. I try to go to bed early if I can. Like, I try to get, like, I'm always thinking, like, I'm going to try to lay down for a few. These guys don't even get that luxury.
No, I used to think it was a joke whenever you'd hear that. No, they have a bed in the back. They have a cot in the back.
Right.
That they'll go and sleep on, or some just sleep there for like a full week. They'll just move into their office and go, oh, I'm here for, you know. And then just all of a sudden, I just had that picture of Tom Hanks in the terminal.
That's right.
That's how they live.
Just nice and cozy on a couch.
Yep, brushing their teeth in the community bathroom.
Oh, goodness. Goodness gracious. It must, you know, but it was a really great insight into, like, Garoppolo with the Patriots. And I know he got a few starts, but he was impressive enough that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, even though they were thinking, because Shanahan worked with Kirk Cousins, that's the guy I kind of want. They literally were like, you know what? We have an opportunity to land this young kid who we think could change the direction of our franchise. And he did.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. All right, with the big game coming up in Miami, and you know what's fun? Those proposition bets that you hear about all the time for the upcoming game. And you know what? You can land on them at Bet Online. Join our exclusive sports betting partner, Bet Online, and if you sign up today, you receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and pro sports right away. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, tease your way through the season. And again, those prop bets for the big game Sunday. And they got prop bets all the way through, like who will win the NBA MVP. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with the new sportsbook partners, Bet Online. Head on over to the website today and use your mobile device and join. Use the promo code SBNation55. Receive your 50% welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Don't also forget futures for Major League Baseball that's going to be starting up in a couple of months. So you got all sorts of good stuff at Bet Online. All right, speaking of college sports and college basketball, did you see this last night at Cameron Indoor Stadium? The Duke Blue Devils took on the Pitt Panthers. Now, Jeff Capel is the head coach of the Pitt Panthers. He is also a Duke Blue Devil. So as the game was winding down and Duke was pulling away for the victory, Mike Krzyzewski went crazy because the Cameron Crazies started chanting at former Blue Devil Jeff Capel, saying, sit with us. Hey, Jeff Capel, sit with us. Now, if you've been following college basketball for a long time, and I go back to the 80s when I was a kid about Coach K and Duke, you know that the Duke Cameron Crazies come up with some really funny and very amusing chants for different opponents, different players. They have some of the best when they were going up against, would go up against North Carolina. They'd come up with some good stuff. Sit with us is not their best, but it's what they wanted to sort of say something to the opposing coach, like they say to a lot of opposing coaches who have gone through there. Well, Coach K had enough, because Jeff Capel not only was a Duke Blue Devil player for him, he was also assistant coach and rightfully moved up the ladder to become a head coach, a move that Mike Krzyzewski fully endorsed. So his love for his former players and former assistants, those in the Duke Blue Devil family, extended so much that he felt like he needed to run over to the side and scream at the Cameron Crazies for chanting at former Blue Devil. He was screaming at them to shut up. He said over and over again, he's one of us. He's one of us. Now, if you watch the video of the students, they probably haven't been talked to like that in their life by an adult. I mean, the look on their faces is priceless. Now, afterwards, Coach K apologized for doing that. I wish he didn't do that. I wish he stood by that. But I understand he's emotional on two levels. One, the Kobe Bryant death affected him very much so. And also the fact that he's very, very protective of the people that played for him. He's very protective of those individuals. You go back to Christian Laettner. Christian Laettner was one of the most hated basketball players in the country, but most of it was jealousy. Right. Most of it was he was living the life most of the adults or young people of that time wanted to live. I know I was. I mean, I would have given anything to have experienced what Christian Laettner was experiencing while he was in college. So a lot of it was based on jealousy. He was one of the most hated players in the game. And Coach K loved him. And he said over and over again, I love him and I will stand by him. And he does that with everybody. He does that with all of his players, all of his players who've gone on to the NBA, all of his players who have gone on post NBA and into coaching and into broadcasting, whatever it may be. Once you're in his family of basketball, you are in his family forever. And he just was emotional from Kobe because he had, obviously coached Kobe in the Olympics and had done a lot of things with Team USA, but also he was protecting one of his guys, and he saw one of his guys getting the ill treatment that Cameron will dish out to other teams that come in, but he didn't want him to experience. He wanted Cameron to be special to Jeff Capel all the time, even when he brought in an opponent, you know, was bringing in an opponent for Duke to play. But I wish Coach K did not do this. And I'm one. I don't think it's insane. I've been seeing a few that said this was crazy. This was nuts. I thought it was great. Now, again, I don't know if this is a generational thing. I don't know if this is an age thing where maybe if you're young, you think it's crazy. Maybe you're old. You like the kind of adult in the room kind of feeling. But also I know where people are saying, look, let the kids have fun. They've been having fun for 30 plus years with all the success that Duke has had. You don't yell at them when they do it to somebody else. Now you're doing it because Jeff Capel's one of your own. Kids will be kids. But at the same time, I think Coach K is also doing something important here when he's admonishing these kids. He's reminding them, because remember, a lot of these kids have just got to Duke. A lot of them are freshmen, sophomores, whatever. They've only been part of the Duke culture for a couple of years. It's not like he was yelling at the senior citizen season ticket holder who went to Duke in 1964 and had been going to games since the 70s. He was talking to a bunch of kids who may not have seen or knew anything about Jeff Capel before they arrived at Duke in the first place. But he was reminding them of the history of the program. And this was the key too. He said to them, and this is why I liked it, because he said to them, he's one of us. He didn't say he's on my team or he's with us, he's with me. He said he's one of us. He's saying, look, you, me, him, we're all in this. We're all Blue Devils. We're all Duke. So you need to do what I'm doing and have respect for a guy that played on this court, that won on this court, and coached on this court with me. And I loved it. I don't think it was insane. It's a rant. It's anger. We all do it. We all go a little crazy. And sometimes we have to step back and apologize. I lost my head. I went a little nuts. And okay, maybe I'll give a little leeway to that. But I would have done it again if I was Coach K. I would put that in my repertoire. I would put that in my, look, anybody else that comes in here that has any ties to this program and they're doing that to him, I will do it again. I will walk across that court and I will yell at you again. We will not do that here. And I loved it. I really did. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great look for him. And I'm not the biggest Coach K guy, you know, because I don't like Duke as much. And I'm, you know, I go back to them winning all the time and me rooting for anybody but Duke. I'm part of that club, right? I'm part of that late 80s, early 90s club where I was pretty much rooting for anybody to upend the Blue Devils. But I respect the program enough to, and I know the success that he's had, and it's on another plane of anybody else, the sustainability of doing that year in and year out, constantly putting together teams that are going to be competing for national championships all the time without any sort of step back. You know, I mean, look, I know Duke had some issues in the 90s, but they never had a season. You know, recently, like, Roy Williams is having in North Carolina. I mean, Roy Williams is, like, begging to be fired. I mean, he's just, his team is a mess. And Duke never does that. Like, Duke never has the year where it's, like, all exploding and they're 1-7 in the ACC and it's all going to hell. And it's the NIT for Coach K. You know, I know in the 80s when he had a back problem and he couldn't coach and the team didn't play all that great, but that's pretty much the only low part of Duke basketball. But I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a good look for Coach K. I wish he didn't apologize. I understand why he did it. I'm sure when he cooled down, he realized maybe he was just, I'm emotional from Kobe. I'm emotional for what I saw, and I might have lost my head. But you know what? Those kids learned a little bit about Duke culture, and they learned a little about Duke history. You know, and the mob mentality can get the best of us sometimes.
Yeah, every time you need a quick kick in the butt.
Yeah, every now and then. But the look on their faces was priceless. Priceless.
It'll be a meme soon.
Especially the kids like who were in the front. They were like, oh. It's like when your dad yells at you, right? It's just, oh, God. Okay, I'm sorry.
Only thing would have made it better if he ended it with, I have spoken.
Yeah, right? I have spoken. I mean, it's you know. Listen, man. Nobody rooted harder against Duke than I did when I was in high school and college. The later thing, you have to kind of like get older to appreciate what Leitner was doing. But at the time, I couldn't have cared less. I couldn't have cared less. Like, if you had told me back when I was like 19, you're like, listen, man, this guy, he's having one of the best college careers of anybody. Like, nobody stays 4 years anymore, let alone going to a Final Four in each of his 4 years, winning two national championships, playing on the dream team, the first ever dream team. He's like, dude, you might as well just I would have said, I don't care. I don't care. This guy is just too much. The idea that Leitner had four Final Fours, two national championships, and he got to be on the greatest collection of basketball talent in the history of the world is just, it just blows my mind that somebody was given all of that. His 30 for 30, I hate Christian Leitner, is one of the better ones.
Yes, it is.
Because when I watched it, I was like, every person that spoke and gave a reason why they didn't like Christian Leitner, I went, yep, that was the reason I didn't like him too. Oh, and that one too. And oh, by the way, that one too. Oh, and that one too.
I mean, there literally was like 30 of them.
Yeah.
If not
every
more.
One of them. Every single one of them. But I think one of the points
honestly, there was no reason for any of them.
Oh, I know.
That's what makes it even better.
Yeah. So what if he was a good-looking guy that could have stolen your college girlfriend by just showing up to campus? Big deal. Right? So what about the success? So what about the fame? So what about the fact that they had to exit Leitner and the team out fire exits because the lobby was filled with screaming girls? Like, they were the Beatles.
Help me out. I'm blanking on the guy's name who tripped people. Grayson something, right?
Grayson Allen. Yeah, he plays for Memphis. Yeah.
Yeah. He there's reason to hate him.
Yeah, that's right.
But still, Christian Leitner will go down as the most hated Duke player ever.
Oh, he did stomp on that Kentucky player's chest, though, in that game where he hit the final shot.
Eh.
Yeah, but you ask Kentucky fans, man, they'll never forget that. Like, shouldn't have never had the shot to begin with. Leitner's, though, is great. I was at the SEC basketball tournament, oh, God, 3 or 4 years ago in Nashville. And I had to take a picture of a guy that said he was a Kentucky fan, obviously. And he had a shirt that said, I still hate Leitner. And I was like, that's awesome. That's great. And like, I think Leitner did like a Bosworth. Remember when Bosworth got into the league and he had people had all these, you know, I hate Brian Bosworth t-shirts.
Yeah.
Like in Denver, like you go to Denver, they would like back in the 80s, Brian Bosworth, I hate Brian Bosworth t-shirts would be up and running. And then you didn't realize that Boz's company was making these t-shirts and selling them. So you would be buying these, yeah, I hate Bosworth t-shirts from Bosworth's company. If I'm not mistaken, I think Leitner had something to do with the I hate Leitner gear that some people were purchasing. Because you just might as well capitalize on people's dislike for you. But Leitner and Duke, you know, they were really the first time that people started hating Duke. I mean, you could go back to the 96 team where they lost to Louisville. I was young, but I never felt like people really didn't like Duke. I think when Leitner and Hurley were rolling through and going to Final Fours, winning championships, I think that's when it peaked. And I think it sort of died down a little bit. Then it came, you know, reared its ugly head with a number of players that have come through that program, from J.J. Redick to Grayson Allen to all these other players. But Coach K has been, you know, one of the, you know, you've got to give the man his due for maintaining a level of sustained success, but every single year they're a threat to win the national championship. They just don't break, right? They just don't have a time where they go, yeah, you know what, all our guys are graduate or all our guys are gone in the NBA. It's going to be a while before we build. No, they just one after another, after another, after another, after another. They just keep pouring along. But I thought last night what he did was pretty cool. All right, it's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, again on Twitter at Tony D Radio. By the way, if you had not been listening to us and you are now back listening to us, let us know. Let us know you're there. You know, because Ron said full participation today. So be part of it. At Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. And this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us. So, more and more tributes coming around for Kobe Bryant, but also for the JUCO baseball coach that John Altobelli, who was also killed in that helicopter crash, his team, the defending champs of it's Orange Coast College.
Yeah.
And they're the defending champs. They had their season opener yesterday. Defending state champs.
But he was, they voted National yesterday. Coach of the Year, though.
Yeah. And what's been interesting is we obviously are overwhelmed with the tributes to Kobe by people around the sports world. It's been interesting to see some of the baseball people who have came in contact with him because he coached some national teams, and some people were on those national teams. Some prominent baseball players have been on those national teams, or they had a run in with him or knew of him or knew people who really knew him. And it was a really nice tribute yesterday that they did for John Altobelli, who was killed in that helicopter crash. Garrett Cole was at the game, was at the opener of the Orange Coast College. Just pay tribute to that coach. I know locally here in Nashville, Tim Corbin is the head coach of Vanderbilt, the defending national champions. And Corbin was very emotional talking to local media about Altobelli. Had worked together on a number of national teams. And he's a legend in the college baseball circle. I mean, he's been there a long time. He's JUCO legend, if you will. If you're a coach in baseball, you probably know of him or know him personally because it's close circle. You probably met him at a number of different things, number of different conferences or whatnot. And especially when you're looking for talent, especially when you're going to the JUCO level to find talent to bring you to the program, I'm sure he's the guy you would call to get a read on a player. Even if he didn't play against that particular player, he probably knows a lot more about that player than you do.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, you're talking about Nashville. They're also honoring him here in Houston because he went to the University of Houston.
All right.
He was a baseball player at University of Houston. So
yeah,
it's just, I mean, you know, he touched a lot of lives all across the country.
Yep, and you're starting to see that with some of the other victims of the crash, of people really. We're starting to get to know them. The pilot had a long history of flying and was, an excellent pilot. Also flew a Kawhi Leonard. You're starting to see the tributes pouring into the other people, and I think it's good.